Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com.
For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events,
sign up now for TBIFM.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBIFM.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Hello, and welcome to Brain Injury Radio tonight. This is Kim Justice with Recovery Now. I was just reading in the chat room to make sure you can all hear out there. Apparently a couple people were having sound difficulties, so somebody might want to let me know you can hear me out there. Anyway, welcome to tonight's show. I'm going to proceed like you can hear me, but maybe Les or Lori, maybe you could type in and let me know. In any case, lots of exciting things going on around Brain Injury Radio these days. We're not only on 7 nights a week with 10 different hosts, and I want to remind you all that our shows are immediately archived into the on-demand section afterward, so you not only can hear us live at the same time and the same number, all week long, but you can also go back and listen to the shows in the on-demand section. So that's a pretty cool feature. The other thing we're very excited about these days is the peer-to-peer support line. Craig, Cecilia, the founder of Brain Injury Radio, and now the founder the peer-to-peer support line, that website is the number 4PEER11.org. That'll tell you all about how to access the peer-to-peer support line. But we're also really looking for some more volunteers. I believe they're up to 10 to 12 hours a day, but the ultimate goal there is to be on 24/7 for peer-to-peer support. And all we're asking is for a commitment of 4 hours a month. So if you're interested in adding a little purpose to your life or being able to help other survivors, please check out that website, 4peer11.org, and it will tell you how to sign up to be a volunteer. Let's see. I'm sorry. I hate to do that if there's some of you out there that can hear. But it looks like the chat room's telling me they're having a little trouble hearing. Not quite sure what to do about that. But I'm going to continue on. In any case, I hear the phone is fine, so that's good. If any of you are having trouble on your computer, what I will tell you then a little early is you can call in to 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. That's why I like to do a little housekeeping up in front of the show so we don't have to interrupt our guest interview with these things. Thanks so much for putting that in the chat, Jenny. The other thing about 4-Pier-1-1 is the new medic ID card. We've talked before, people wear the medic ID jewelry, and some people don't do anything, but a lot of us, even here tonight, have metal in our head that precludes us from having MRIs and other various treatments. And so it is kind of important that we have that information in case we're ever not able to advocate for ourselves in an emergency situation. And so this card is about the size of a driver's license, and they're able to scan it just like you do with your debit card, but instead of getting money, the first responders in the hospital will be able to get medical information about you. And I don't understand a lot about the technology, but you can put a portion of your medical records in there, or you can say something as simple as no magnetic imaging due to brain clip. So lots of latitude there. Again, you can read about that on 4-PER-11.org. Be sure to check that site out. Okay, I think we got most of the housekeeping out of the way. I am really excited tonight about my guest. She's very accomplished, and I think this is going to be just a wonderful interview. But Janet Kromer, RNMALMHC, speaks nationally at conferences, hospitals, rehabilitation centers, universities, support groups, and community events. Janet specializes in stress and compassion resilience, family caregiver issues, brain injury, living well with progressive illness, ethical decision making, and creativity and healing. Janet is a medical psychiatric RN and a licensed psychotherapist specializing in psychological aspects of medical illness. Janet is an educator for professionals, family, caregivers, brain injury survivors, and students. In addition to her professional expertise, Janet's experience as a spousal caregiver and author informs her presentations with wisdom, compassion, honesty, and humor. Janet shares the dark side of chronic illness and caregiving, as well as the resilient strength and creative resourcefulness of the person with an illness and his family. Throughout her career, Janet has dedicated herself to developing psychoeducational programs to enhance the psychological and physical well-being of healthcare professionals. She approaches stress resilience and compassion fatigue prevention as a developmental process which every professional has the right to integrate into his or her life. Janet can also visit medical humanities and narrative medicine programs to discuss her memoir, Professor Kromer Learns to Read, A Couple's New Life After Brain Injury. And we're going to talk about all of those things, but I want to go back to that book one more time, Professor Kromer Learns to Read, and you can check that out at her website, which is janetkromer.com, and I'll put that in the chat room, but it's janetkromer.com. And, something else good, I forgot. Thing with brain injuries. I'm glad we got the caregiver on here tonight. Professor Kromer Learns to Read is the recipient of the 2010 Neil DeWayne Award for Distinction and a 2010 Salamine Award for Excellence in Medical Communication from the American Medical Writers Association New England chapter, and finalist in the 2010 Forward Reviews Book of the Year contest. Wanted to remember to tell you that. You can also find her on Lash Publishing. I'd like to thank The Lashes for being my new program sponsor. They're just wonderful people, and I encourage you to check out their website at lapublishing.org. Their publications are all about traumatic brain injury, whether it's survivor stories or educational materials for people in recovery, as well as healthcare professionals. And our guest tonight, Janet, as well as all of the things that I was reading you, her marvelous accomplishments, is also, I believe, the editor, if not a major contributor. I'll let her clarify that for me, but I think she's the editor of the last publishing new magazine called Brain Injury Journey, Hope, Help, and Healing. Now, this magazine just started in April, and you can receive a copy of this magazine free by email. So again, I encourage you to go to lapublishing.com, and I'll type that into the chat room in a little while. On the left side of their homepage, just a little ways down, you'll see Brain Injury Journey. Click on that. It'll take you to the page that tells you about the magazine, and then a little ways down, it'll say that you can receive hard copies for $48 a year. That'd be 6 issues. Or you can get the e-version for free. And right by that, it says click here. You let them have your email address, and you'll be provided this wonderful new magazine for free, of which I'm going to be writing an article for the next edition, I think. And Janet is way ahead of me. If she's the editor, I guess I better be careful here. But in any case, enough about me. I would like to introduce you guys, those of you who haven't had the opportunity to meet Janet Cromer. Are you with me, Janet?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Kim. Thanks so much for inviting me to be on your show.
Thank you so much for being here. I've got to tell you, I did get the opportunity to read your book, and that's not a small feat for me. I have a hard time with attention and remembering what I read, and kind of compromised that way, but the reviewers were right about your book. It's very hard to put down once you pick it up, and there was everything from, oh, you know, tears to smiles to laughter, and I'm going to start us off with the way I traditionally do interviews, but then there's a couple of things in your book, not long passages, but little things that, a couple little things I'd like to read, and then a couple of your chapters I'd like to talk a little bit about. But why don't we start at the beginning, and I just want to, again, welcome you being here, and maybe we can start real quick with, are you the editor or major contributor to that new magazine?
Oh, okay. I think you're right. It is a great magazine. It has something for everybody in the brain injury community. And I'm not the editor, but I do contribute the column. I'm a feature writer of the Caregiver's Compass column that will be in every issue. And that will talk about the topics that caregivers of people with brain injuries tend to whisper to each other when we get together.
Ah, okay. And I did put that in. I believe I misstated it a moment ago, so I'm going to redo this, and I put it in the chat, lapublishing.com. So check out lapublishing.com,
right,
and do sign up for that free magazine.
Right, so, it's a wonderful magazine.
You have an anniversary coming up.
Oh, yes.
A profound anniversary that changed your life. And as a matter of fact, I know I said I was going to do it later, but let me see if I can find real quick something in the beginning of your book. She says, I've been privileged to talk with a few hundred brain injury survivors and their closest family members. Every family giver tells the story of, quote unquote, the moment everything changed. With the emotional charge, an event that happened yesterday, even if the accident was 20 years ago, that's how dramatic the turning point is, regardless of the cause of the brain injury or the age of the person affected. And maybe we'll start there. July 5th, I believe, of 1998 was that day for you. Is that right?
Yes, it is. And it's as if it happened yesterday. That's very true. What happened was that my husband, Alan, and I traveled to Chicago for a family reunion just for the weekend. We thought we'd be there 2 days. We had one change of clothes. And it was a 50th anniversary of his sister and her husband, and everyone came from around the country. It was a wonderful time. And as we got back onto the airplane on Sunday afternoon, Alan said, "Oh, I feel so sick. I feel dizzy." And in the matter of moments, just as I was saying, "Are you having pain in your chest or what's going on?" I grabbed his wrist to feel for his pulse, and I felt his heart stop, and he just slumped back dead against the seat. And we were able to do some cardiopulmonary resuscitation on the plane, but not very well because they didn't have a defibrillator or equipment. So it was some time before an ambulance could get to O'Hare Airport on a holiday weekend. I don't remember. I don't recommend having medical emergencies on holiday weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan was resuscitated for about a total of an hour between the airplane, the ambulance, and finally in a hospital emergency department. And the, you know, we all hear that brain cells start to die after 3 minutes or so. And here he was for an hour. He would start to respond, and then his heart would stop again over and over. And it was pretty almost miraculous that at the end of an hour of resuscitation, he, in fact, did come back to life. However, he had a severe brain injury in several areas from the lack of oxygen from that time. But all along, I think he was really fighting to come back to life himself in addition to the medical treatment he received. But that mm-hmm. was it. In one instant, life changes and you don't go back. One door slams closed and you know this, you don't go back through that same door. You have to carve out a new door. So we landed up, we went to Chicago for 2 days. We were there for a month, and then Alan was in hospitals in Boston for 3 months after that. So finally, 4 months after we left home, he came back home again.
Wow. One thing I want to ask you, and then we'll come back, is when I first came here to Brain Injury Radio, there was some discussion and distinction among some about that TBI, about what a traumatic brain injury is. And there were some that thought that it was an accident, you know, some kind of a blow to the head. Mm-hmm. I, with a ruptured aneurysm, certainly thought that was traumatic as all heck.
Right.
I should be able to be a qualifier, by golly. But I read, and I'm sorry if I don't get the terminology right, but you've got, anyway, DJ, one of our hosts, informed me that I had an acquired brain injury.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which I would look at, you're the nurse, clarify me as we go, of a subset or type of a traumatic brain injury, but you named one that I had never heard of before. In fact, one of the things about your book is I had no idea, because you hear about brain cancer and TBI, the traditional kind, acquired brain injury, but this was anoxic? Tell me your terminology.
Yes, it's called anoxic or hypoxic, meaning lack of oxygen or no oxygen to the important cells of the brain or in every other part of the body. And it's a relatively common injury in the sense that I've been involved in the brain injury world for 15 years now and helped start I was a founding member of a very large brain injury support group back in Boston. And we had many people who had an anoxic brain injury, but very few doctors understand it, and there are very few treatment programs specific to brain injuries caused by lack of oxygen. it's treated in pretty much the same way a traumatic brain injury is, or especially back in 1998 it was. A little distinction is that when someone has a traumatic brain injury, and I know that the Brain Injury Association is revising definitions all the time now, but the common understanding used to was that a traumatic brain injury would happen from a blow or something happening outside the head, striking the head, and causing a cascade of changes or injuries inside the brain. Those injuries tended to be sort of in one area. They'd call it localized, like an area where an aneurysm, they might not even call an aneurysm TBI by that old definition, but let's say someone hit their head on the car dashboard during a crash and hit the forehead area, a lot of the damage would be right behind the forehead. The difference when someone doesn't get enough oxygen to their brain is that it's sort of a diffuse, I thought of it as sort of a Swiss cheese pattern to the brain, where you lose, there's damage to all the areas that are particularly sensitive and need a lot of oxygen. So it's kind of like the lights have gone out in different areas all over the brain, which can make rehabilitation harder. And I've met a number of people who had anoxic injuries, often from a heart attack, not getting enough oxygen during that time. I've met several people who had cardiac arrest during surgery, even didn't get enough oxygen. And children who drowned or almost drowned and didn't get oxygen for a while. So those are a few of the common ways that it happens. But one reason I wanted to write the book was to bring more attention to the fact that many people now live through resuscitation. You know, the techniques have improved a lot, but no one tracks them after that. There are very few studies and show, well, how many of them actually have some significant brain damage, and how does that affect their life after their life was saved? And so that was one reason I wanted to shed some light on that subject by using Alan and my experience with that. And I do speak to doctors and nurses sometimes about what happens after the resuscitation and how they could help prepare families and patients better.
That's something that I really appreciated about your book. Briefly, after I had my rupture, was in a coma 11 days, had a craniotomy, went through some therapy for a couple of months, and then looked normal. When I complained of some things to the doctor, like my emotions seemed all out of whack and I couldn't remember things, and I would get what I call full basket syndrome, sensory overload, and I'd name things to him. He said, oh, most of that'll resolve in time, and that was it, and they cut me loose. Period. 17 years later, I write a book, stumble into Brain Injury Radio, and I'm learning, so you guys all know a lot more than I do about this. I'm kind of now learning in retrospect, and that's exactly what didn't happen for me and my family at the time, and that was any hint or indication that there would be any residual or difference in me. Now that they cracked my bean, clipped it, and put Humpty back together, that's what we thought we had, was Humpty back together. And there was so much denial around it. I mean, for me, for one, because I looked normal and I wanted to be that, and for my family, because it was obviously traumatic for them. I was 35 years old, healthy out of the blue. You know, this happens, and I look normal, and they wanted me to be that way too. And, you know, a good way to cope with the uncopeable is to dash to denial, you know. And
right. That's
what we did, you know. And I kept a secret, you know, and I lied. I lied to me and everybody else. if not directly lying, lying by omission and out of fear, by living in that world of post-it notes, by putting little cues around to help me remember. Mm-hmm. And it was so taxing on my psyche. And since you were, I looked, you know, and when I read that you were a psychiatric nurse, I thought, I've always tried to avoid those institutions. I'm afraid they'll keep me if I stay very long. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I'll have to be on my good behavior with Janet tonight, or she'll send the men in the white coats to put me away. But anyway, back to you. Yes, for that reason, and I got to remember what track I was on, but I was most appreciative reading your book about you, not just talking about the incident and the recovery, the immediate recovery period, but the long-term effects, not only in the relationship of the individual survivor and caretaker, but as a couple. And last night, and then I'm going to let you talk, one of our regulars, Sarah, was talking about love. She was in an accident where she lost her fiancé, and there was a lot of love there. And as I was looking over some of my notes today, I couldn't help but think about some comments she made last night on the show. And you and your husband, boy, a lot of love will go a long way in this pretty tough proposition, won't it?
Yes, it will. And I think we had to, one of the many things we did was to redefine what love was about, because Alan changed so much because of the brain injury that we were sort of strangers to each other. Oh, and he had amnesia for his own life and our life together for quite some time, so that we actually had to get to know each other all over again and decide whether to fall in love and then redefine marriage. And many couples do this, but I wanted to break it down and sort of show what that was like, because everyone assumes you just go back to the same relationship. And if I can just backtrack for a moment to two things you said there, Kim, about long-term effects and about psychological problems. Yes, I was naive at first when Alan became ill. I thought, well, after a year or two, I'd like to write a book, and that was partly because this world was so new to me. I had been a nurse for many years in medicine and psychiatry by then, but I knew so little about brain injury. It wasn't part of my training, and I had not worked in neurology. And I thought, wow, and I've been a nurse, and I'm having a hard time with all this, learning all this new information and continuing rehab at home every day. But the other part was that I was absolutely astonished at how the brain can heal and build new connections, and with the incredible stamina and courage that Alan had to practice for days and weeks to learn the alphabet again. He was so motivated. And I wanted to use his example to give hope to other people with brain injuries, too. So originally I had this nice idea that, okay, in a year or two I'll write a book. Alan lived for 7 years after the brain injury. He died in 2005 of heart disease. But during that time, because of his different disabilities, he needed a lot of attention and direct care and coaching and all of that. And I never had time to write a book. And now I think it was better that I didn't, because I read every book back then. One of my ways of coping is to learn as much as I can about a subject. And there was some great books, but they all stopped after the first year or two. And they all stop when the person's making what you think is going to be this marvelous recovery and becoming themselves again. And that does happen for a lot of people, which is great. But I've met all the people that doesn't happen for. You know, they're left with significant cognitive challenges or personality differences and emotional after effects. So that I thought, I want to write a book that's sort of more honest about the long-term issues And also how you redefine yourself, how you build a new identity after brain injury, and how you do find meaning in life and how you contribute again. So I think it did turn out to be best that I waited to write the book to address those long-term effects. It's still one of the few books I've read that goes the distance that way. The other thing I'd like to just get back to is what you mentioned about people being afraid of psychiatry or any kind of mental health, and how protective you do have to be sometimes, especially when you know that you're trying to pass, you know, and you don't want other people to know that you're relying on the post-it notes, and you know that you're crying into your pillow at night, and you're just so overwhelmed by stimuli. You know, you give yourself credit because you were brilliant to figure out how to do all those things when you didn't get the cognitive rehab. But also, I think we all have that fear that if I tell someone how depressed I've been or how confused I am, they'll think I'm crazy, and, you know, they'll lock me up. When we've come so far in psychology and mental health with understanding how normal all those responses are, and that we all go through these periods where we can really benefit from help. And in the book, I talk a lot about, you know, Alan's depression that he was left with and some of the anger management problems that we had, and those were directly related to the brain injury. But in the book, I was also very honest about my own depression and times when I was angry. Because, again, I think the more we share the truth about ourselves, the more it normalizes it and also makes us all aware of what help is available. You know, I talk freely about how beneficial seeing a therapist was and how I found antidepressant medicine helpful for times. And so I think the more we can share that information and just normalize that a lot of coping and resilience involves getting the help we need at the time.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I was kind of saying that tongue-in-cheek because eventually what did help me is that my neurosurgeon was a visiting neurosurgeon. And, again, this was 95, so everybody didn't have a computer on their desk. And, and there was no support group here back then. There's still not now, all these years later. My internist had misdiagnosed me, and so I didn't go back to him. And so when they cut me loose, I lived alone was the answer to your one question about how I was able to do what you said, and that was that I'd fake it by day and go home and have a nervous breakdown at night most of the time. You know, I would cry and I'd experience what emotions I would allow myself, I guess, that I knew how to at the time, at home alone where I lived, and that helped because I didn't have to act all the time just during the day. And then I was so tired, you know, I was so tired not only from my injury but from the acting. And eventually what got me when I did hook up, it was probably a year later when I got bronchitis or something, that I got a new internist. And I went in and, you know, I told him, you know, what had happened to me, and he had the records. But we never really, you know, he wasn't ever really part of the loop except for having the knowledge. At least he didn't validate what I had to say. And nobody ever suggested, he never suggested that I see a neurologist or any practitioner like that. And so I was able to go because I was in a sheltered work environment for quite a while, and a family business. But when that ended and the faking, you know, that whoever wrote that other book, I'm Dancing as Fast as I Can, that's, I think, what was happening with me. And I started falling like a house of cards, and ultimately where I went was a psychiatrist. I didn't seem to get help from the regular doctors, and I said, I'm crazy, please help me. I've been trying not to be, you know, for a decade, but I can't do this anymore. I was very blessed, and fortunately he retired, but I got to have a long relationship with Dr. O, and he did what my family, me, the internist, the surgeon, anybody, he did what nobody else had, and that was he validated me.
Oh, that's so important.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is not to say that takes the depression away, right?
No, it's the first step to getting the right treatment.
Absolutely. Well, I want to go back into your story. So your husband, for one thing, that blows me away. They resuscitated him for an hour. And one thing I wanted to point out too, we both keep jumping back to our spot, but in the chat room, I typed in that terminology, and would it be, that's lack of oxygen, but is introduction of carbon monoxide. One of our hosts, Frank, the Thursday night host, he got his injury from being in a fire, and the carbon monoxide got to him. He was actually carried out of the burning house in a body bag, as I understand it.
Wow.
And that's where he got his brain injury. So I suppose that one is kind of in the neighborhood of what we're talking about when we're depriving the brain of oxygen.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay. All right, so your husband, let's talk about the recovery period. Mm-hmm. This is kind of new. Of course, you were away from home. You had to be away from home, mm-hmm. So I'm assuming they were strange doctors, strange facilities. It wasn't
right.
A place. That had to be bad, too, just that you were away from home.
Right.
You
the
know?
First month, we just stayed in Chicago because Alan was too unstable medically to move back. And they did have a little guest house, but they didn't have any rooms for a few weeks. And I don't think I would have left his bedside anyway. So I just camped in the waiting room of the intensive care unit for a few weeks. And, you know, good boy, got to know a whole group of families there. You know, that's a whole culture of its own. And we tried very hard to support each other. But it was very hard. I was on the phone back to my family and friends every day. And after a month, we were able to transfer Alan back to Boston on an air ambulance, which was pretty scary. The nurse who was with us was great, but it was a pretty scary experience. And then he was admitted to a rehabilitation hospital for 3 more months. So at least we were home, although our world had changed dramatically. I remember being in the back of the ambulance coming from Logan Airport to bring us to the hospital in Boston. And we'd been away for a month at that point, and I had barely been out of the hospital. I forgot it was summer. This happened July 5th, and now it was August. And I remember distinctly sitting, looking out the back window of the ambulance, holding Alan's hand. He was sleeping. But all along this parkway that we have in Boston, along the Charles River, people were rollerblading and sailing. And I felt like I had dropped down from another planet. And I said to Alan, oh, it's still summer. All these people's lives have gone on while ours ended. It felt like a Martian dropping back in. But, you know, tell your listeners who Alan was before. Alan, when he was 62 when this happened, and he was a professor of physics at Northeastern University, very bright guy, had written all kinds of textbooks and science books for the public. And because of the brain injury, he lost his abilities to read and write, to talk, to walk for quite a while, to think and remember. And, man, I had no idea what abilities those were and what goes into them until the rehab process. And he was left with pretty severe memory impairment after that. And it took months of rehab to learn to write his name, to read, and eventually he could read it, let's say, about a third grade level. but he practiced every day of his life, and his writing was about at that level also. His speech became really good again. He had this incredible vocabulary, even though he couldn't remember what he had said 2 hours ago. So in some ways, he was very much himself. And in other ways, he was this person who relied a lot on notes to himself constantly and asking questions a lot. But he was never able to go back to teaching any kind of science or math classes. That knowledge never came back for him, even when we tried to reteach it. However, sure. You know, the brain is so mysterious. What did come back were like big chunks of knowledge of Shakespeare and Broadway musicals and ancient history.
I remember that in the hospital when you right after the one surgery where you were reading the classic and the
Odyssey, came in. Homer's Odyssey,
yes.
was his favorite
yes.
book. And boy, mm-hmm. that was a good comparison, Alan's Odyssey. I almost called my book Alan's Odyssey. What he had to do to get back, you know, it was like Greek epic. But so what we did was just build on everything that he did have an interest in or any knowledge that he had from before that came back in those forms, and we would just use that to the max. We were very fortunate that his curiosity came back. I know some people who have brain injuries are left with sort of an apathy where they have a hard time getting interested or getting started on something. We were fortunate that he was curious about everything, and so we bought children's encyclopedias and science books and first and second grade readers, and he practiced with them for hours a day. There was a dignity to all that, you know, because some people would feel so humiliated by it, and he did in the beginning when he understood what he had lost. But then there was this dignity and fortitude, you know, in watching him sit there with these third grade readers or children's books and get smarter and smarter.
Now, how did you feel during this time where, first of all, you get home and, well, not even get home, but you saw what his deficits were going to be, had no idea. I mean, the deficits themselves had to be extremely shocking. And then you come back and you're watching him read these books and living now with these deficits. How were you feeling at this time?
Mm-hmm. Well, for a long time I called myself the queen of coexisting emotions, because I had so many feelings at a time, and they were not exactly contradictory, but they were all like on one hand this, on the other hand that. For example, I was very bewildered and mystified for a long time. I was terrified of the responsibility involved in helping Alan relearn everything all over again, all at the same time, and hoping that I would be able to do that, that I could learn to do that. And I was very grateful that he had lived, but I still worried that a point would come where he would question the decisions I had made that kept him alive. You know, I made
right.
all his decisions for him about continuing resuscitation and even treating complications in the ICU. We did reach a point where he could say, and it took a year after the brain injury, he finally said on Thanksgiving Day, "I'm glad I lived to see this day." And I felt myself like exhale, because all that time I'd been feeling, you know, sort of the weight of the decisions I'd made on his behalf and
right.
trying to help him develop a new way of figuring out, well, what's quality of life mean now when you have a severe brain injury, and helping mm-hmm. him become a person he would be proud to be. So it meant a lot when a year later he finally said, "I'm glad I lived to see this day." But so I had all these swirl. I went through a lot of grieving, which I think is very important to do. Alan did too, as he gained that awareness of what he had lost in a very global way. He grieved, and I did too. And at first I grieved for both of us, but boy, did that knock me down pretty fast. I was so aware of everything he had lost long before he was. And also for myself, you know, I knew this wasn't the man I had been married to for 11 years and the Alan I fell in love with. And I grieved that loss while also trying very hard and was able to do it to embrace this new Alan and kind of love him ferociously, you know, so we could make a new life together.
Right. When one of the things that, and it's some personal experience, but what I appreciated you talked about in your book, and you just mentioned it again, so it rang a bell with me, but one of your chapters is called Who Am I If I Am No Longer Myself? And I have a family member who has a debilitating degenerative disease, and what I'm watching happen is that the things that have always defined him and that gave him his passion for living and charged his battery have been getting taken away one at a time. And in 2013, which we aren't that far into it yet, it's been bad. Some big things getting taken away, you know, within a few month period. And unlike me, who went to the shrink and admitted defeat, I surrendered to win, you know, but a lot of people don't look at it that way, you know, they don't
That's
see
right.
it that
Surrender,
way. They look at
not
it as
defeat, right?
Right. They see it as a sign of weakness, not a sign of strength, that you're going and finally saying, I can't help it, to God, to the shrink, to whoever it takes, you know. But the point being, anyway, that he's not found things to replace the things that are getting taken away and is so obstinate and angry. Of course, depressed, won't admit it, but I recognize it. And a lot of other things about the losses, and I'm sure grieving through it. But for me, if I wouldn't have got the balance, put some balance into my recovery program by, for each thing I'd lose and couldn't do, and I didn't do this right away, or I couldn't articulate it the way I am now, or all of that, but I mean, I needed to find those other things to give me some balance, to restoke my purpose, to still make me glad I was alive, even though I wasn't how I recognized me. And that gave balance, as some things would be taken away, or I'd realize they were gone in my case, I guess. I would grieve those. I would feel bad about that. I'd get angry, frustrated, go through the gamut of what you go through. But then I would try something new, you know, going out and taking pictures. I took a lapidary class. I mean, there was just a bunch of new things I tried. And at first it was grudgingly, you know. Mm-hmm. I wanted my old life back, you know. But with Dr. O's help, you know, I was able to go out, and he'd say, just try it. You know, you don't have to be the best. You don't have to compete. Mm-hmm. You don't have to win. All you have to do is get off the bench and take the action to try it. And so I did, and I was laughing last night. One of the things I tried, some people who were trying to be good friends to me had me join the sand volleyball team, and we got a lot of laughs on Les Paul's show last night because I said I get manicures and manis and pedis, and I am very much a girly girl, and that sand volleyball, I just hated that, you know. It, God, that was not my thing at all, you know. And bowling, for God's sake. There was a day I wouldn't drive past a bowling alley, let alone go through the parking lot and go in, you know, heaven forbid, you know, and no offense to the bowlers out there, I did grow to like that a little until I got trigger thumbs and I can't do it anymore. But anyway, then there were things, you know, like the photography and the writing, you know, I was writing some poetry at the time and you know, the lapidary class. I had collected rocks when I was a kid, so I took it a step further with an interest I had had before and, like you said, built on it. And I really appreciated you talking about that in the book, because you're not pitched to shut out. It just feels like it. But that old saying about when one door closes, another one opens is very true if you'll allow yourself, well, first of all, I guess to recognize you're going through that grief process and to validate that anger, frustration, depression are parts of it, but it's still okay even with those things to start putting a toe in the water, trying some new things. And the more of those you try, you get empowered and that confidence starts coming back because you've even stood up to get off the bench to approach where the game's going on. And eventually you find things you like that stoke that life is worth living thing. And I'm real sad for what's going on in my family right now, and the fact that I seem to be ineffective at this point trying to help that, whether it's directly or by example, I'm not being effective. But I'm so glad you wrote it down in a book that people can read about a couple, not just the survivor, not just the caregiver, but the two of you together, and that you spent some time talking about that building a new life.
Yes, well, thank you. And I think it's such an important issue. And, you know, when we have the identity we're used to, we don't even think about it. We take it completely for granted. But then when we're not that same person and we have to, or, you know, would say have the opportunity to rebuild it, it has its own advantages. And I like that on your website you mentioned you focus on the four A's of recovery: the awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. And you just described that so well when you were talking about your own new interests. And Alan did that also. What mattered most to Alan is the core of his identity all his life had been being a teacher, and he knew he couldn't teach science anymore. But what he did was become a motivational speaker for people in rehabilitation. He would go and visit people individually and tell them his story and, you know, encourage them as they were just starting rehab. He had great impact on my college students who'd been in car accidents and could see this professor telling them that he had to learn to read. He also did a lot of speaking at our rehab hospital to the medical staff and to the public about what it's like to have to learn everything all over again, what it's like to have a brain injury. And when he spoke, you know, again, he looked like nothing had happened, but he put on his old professorial tweed jacket and silk tie, and I could just see people kind of edge forward on the seat and really listen to him because they could kind of relate to at least how he looked, you know.
Right.
And in the book, I also describe how the severity of Alan's issue contributed to him developing dementia and Parkinson's. But for several years, he looked like nothing ever happened. The other thing that really became a big part of what he enjoyed getting up for in the morning and trying new was he became an expert on craft kits. He loved to build things from kits, and with his cognitive concerns, it worked best if he had a kit that had the pieces all cut out and a list of instructions. And he gave away dozens and dozens of sun catchers he made or key holders to all his treatment staff and to family and friends. And he'd get so excited, saying, okay, how many orders do I have? Oh, I better get to work this morning doing that craft kit. And we took classes and things, and he'd often come up with this idea of what we should take a class in together. So we took classes in Tai Chi down at our local health center, had very inexpensive classes. So we did Tai Chi. We took drawing and painting classes and beginning computer. So, again, it's that being willing to be a beginner, and I'm a lifelong learner. I'm always taking something for the first time. So Alan, you know, could felt very supported in that attitude. And I think over time we all tend to define ourselves. I know I used to get caught up in this, like, by our work and what we do in the world and how much it matters. But really, when all that is stripped away, it's the personal qualities that you have, you know, inside yourself. Like with Alan, it was that courage and determination and the compassion you developed for other people that matter more than any particular performance ability that we have.
Right. Well, I found that, at least in my life, I found that to give it away is a way I can keep it. When I'm helping others, I'm less focused on myself. There's more identification, you know, with other people, which makes you feel not as isolated or alone in your condition. And I'll bet that was just mind-blowing for those students. And what a great way to, you know, for him to feel purpose to go out and talk, you know, talk to people like that. I wasn't fortunate enough to be able to do that. Well, I guess I am now here in
the
brain
injury community.
Yes, you're
doing it now all the time.
Yeah, now I'm doing it, but here, which I'm very blessed and grateful to do, but I had been doing that and still do in the addiction recovery area for the last 25 years. And, you know, I went and spoke at Boys Town not long ago to a class there, and now it's cool how things do evolve, because before I was talking about addictions and consequences, and now I'm able to talk about brain injuries as well. Before, I wouldn't talk about mine. I would just strictly talk about what I went there to talk about. But, you know, the truth of the matter is it's all connected, you know. And one of the other things I say on my show page is I think we're all recovering from something a little bit every day. And it took me time. And this experience, you know, always more will be revealed. And like you said, timing is everything. I wouldn't have had the same book had I written it in 95 as the one, you know, that I wrote a little over a year ago, because more was going to be revealed to me that was going to make that come full circle. And I think that happened with you too. But, you know, now when I talk to groups, whether it's a book signing thing or just going out and speaking to a recovery group, you know, I'm able to talk about brain injuries, and often addictive disorders are at the front or the back or both of a brain injury. And so I know that the kids, when I talk to a kids group, they, like you said, they can't believe it because I look normal and I can talk.
Yes.
But when I talk about the before, you know, what happened, what it was like, and what it was like, what it is like now. That journey that they're able to go on with you and really think about if they were in those shoes and maybe think twice, you know, and if even one of those kids, and we hope a lot more than that, you know, hear that message and their life is saved as a result and they don't have to go through all this, then that fires us up to make us want to go keep talking. And I'm sure that's the case with you too. You do a whole heck of a lot more of it than I do, and you do it all over the world. But it must be very gratifying to share your experience, strength, and hope with your audiences.
It is, and one of the best parts is the interaction that comes from that. And I learn so much from everybody that I speak with. You know, I may, it starts out with my being the guest speaker on a certain topic, but I always invite people in the audience to share their stories and to tell me how they do it. You know, I want to know, this is how I learn, you know, how do you become resilient, or how did you handle this problem? We can learn so much from each other.
Exactly, and that's what I think is the great thing, because just about the time we think we're the only one in the world who's ever gone through this and we are clueless, the only light we see at the end of the tunnel is the train. You know, when you go out and you're in a support group or you listen to these speakers, you come and hear shows like this, you learn things that help you, because other
That's
people
right.
have been through it, you know, even if it's just knowing you're not the only one on the planet, you know, that's gone through that. You know, you get tips that help you along the way. I know even in the time that I've been here, relatively short time, you know, about 9 months, there have been so many things I've learned that it's incredible. I just wish, you know, and things happen the way they're supposed to, I guess, but I wish I could have known some of these things 17 years ago. I would have gone through a lot less pillowcases crying on them at night, you know?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think
Go ahead. No, please, go ahead.
I was going to mention that support, you know, getting support in many forms is so important for both survivors and caregivers. And one of the most meaningful things that Alan and I did was we were invited to be founding members of a support group in Boston for people who lived in the community. And I was able to facilitate that group for about 7 years and started a spin-off group of that for family caregivers. But Alan often looked forward to going to the meetings, especially if he was speaking on a panel or doing a show and tell about the crafts he was making. But it became a place where we made some very good friends who sort of got it, you know, and understood the whole new life business. And we'd go out and socialize or do things together in ways that work for us. But we had expert speakers at all of the meetings. And just by comparing notes from the real experts, the people who've been living and thriving, you know, with the brain injury and their family members, you just learn so much.
How do you help people who don't want to admit they're one of those to go to those meetings? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, who don't want to belong to a club that they qualify for. Alan often didn't want to go. He didn't quite get, he sort of knew he had a brain injury, but he would go through long periods where he didn't want to hear about it, and he didn't quite believe it. So he would say, all right, I'll go because you like to go to these meetings. You work there, don't you? And I'd say, well, yeah, sort of, I facilitate it. But he saw it as we were going for me, not for him, but then once we were there, he would often pick up a tip, you know, from the guest speaker that we had or something like that. Or he'd have a share a laugh with another member of the group. But also he did find it hard. It was very overstimulating. It was a very large group. But as far as getting other people to go, sometimes it's finding a particular angle of it that might appeal. You know, a particular speaker that month on a topic that they might find interesting on an sort of an intellectual level, whether or not it applies to their life when you know that it really does apply to their life. Or sometimes it's asking a person to accompany someone else who's shy about going, you know, but they both go together.
That's
or
a good one.
Yes, you know, or sometimes it's asking why someone, you know, finds it so hard to consider this sort of idea. And that's kind of big to take on by yourself. But if there's some particular aspect of it, like that, one thing people fear about support groups, and I've led throughout my career, I facilitated support groups for people with medical diseases and cancer and things like that. People are always afraid of what they're going to see there, and they're going to see someone
yes.
who's worse off than themselves.
Yes.
And it will terrify them, fearing that they'll become like that, or that they won't be able to help that person or communicate with them, and, you know, they'll feel really bad about that. So sometimes when someone's hesitant about a group or they're, you know, acting like that has nothing to do with me, it can be just interesting to ask, well, what do you think it would be like? What do you think goes on there? And, you know, let me tell you a little about my experience there. Because often
yeah.
there's some sort of fear, too.
You know, to me, one of the things I think that might help as you were talking, or maybe another approach, is that, you know, some people, my relative, for example, is embarrassed. You know, they're embarrassed
yes.
about involuntary movements and some things that they're dealing with. And, you know, one of the things I've always said on here is that I like to tell people here, and I tell it off the air, but I say, I got one of the most forgiving audiences in the world. I am so grateful. And the other night it was kind of you might know Mike Strand. Do you know Mike Strand?
I know who he is. I haven't met him in person, but I know who he is. Mm-hmm.
Okay. He was funny. He was here, I think it was last week, maybe the week before, memory, sorry. But anyway, you know, I tell my guests, you know, to call in a couple minutes ahead, and I'm watching the switchboard, and he's not coming on, and then my intro plays, it comes to the end, I start doing my housekeeping, I'm watching that switchboard with one eye, and I'm kind of freaking because Mike's not showing up on the switchboard. And so I was really lucky, I happened to have my cell phone, and a lot of times I don't register where people are from because I get a lot of calls from all over. But anyway, I hit recents. You know, I was blessed to remember Minnesota. I hit the number, and I say to my audience, I say, you know, I'm going to play a song by one of our new artists and go see if I can wrestle up our guest. And I did the right thing. I put on the song, and then I dial Mike, and he answers, and I say, Mike, were you planning on coming on tonight? You know, we're 10 minutes into the hour. And he was like, oh, my God.
But the end of that story, it just got me about Michael last week, was that when he didn't call in and I put the song on, I thought everything was cool. He called in, I saw him show up on the switchboard, and then somebody private messaged me from the chat and said, Tim, you forgot to mute your mic, which meant everybody heard the song, but they heard me talking to Mike, too.
Oh,
hunting
okay.
him down.
Oh, boy.
And so I'm thinking in my mind, we do not edit on this show, and I was thinking in my mind, my husband has that capability, and I thought, I'm going to have him cut off the front of this show. And a while into the show, we're like 45 minutes in, and I'm asking Mike what kind of residuals he has, and he named off several things, and then I said, what about memory? It seems like a lot of us have problems with memory. And he said, embarrassed, he said, well, obviously, that's one of my problems. I forgot about the show tonight. And then I said, well, since you weren't here for the beginning of the show, do you want to hear something funny? And he said, I'd love to. And so I told him the story that I just told you guys, and he started laughing. It was like the air came out of the balloon, and he was like, thank you so much for telling me that. You know, I had felt so bad, but we all got a big laugh out of that. And that minute, I knew I would never have anyone try to edit that show. I would leave it alone. And
right.
And then I said something like, this is Brain Injury Radio. This is what we do here. And so
mm-hmm.
I think the point I was making before I got lost was just that this is a very forgiving audience here. And I feel very, very blessed for that. And that's what I was thinking, that if someone was embarrassed about things going on with them, you know, that they didn't want to be seen and they wanted to isolate, that
yes.
might be one good suggestion about getting them to mm-hmm. a support group. How can you be embarrassed in a room with people that have the same thing going on you do? It's actually very liberating.
I think getting there is the first time. But so asking in advance, what would help you be comfortable? You know, is there are there things we can do so that the muscle movements are minimal at the time? You know, something to reduce the stress or keep you warm or cold or whatever it is, so that you have a little strategy. Alan and I were very good at strategizing in advance for situations he was nervous about going into. You know, how can we give you control of this situation, essentially, so that once you get there, you can say, oh, you know, a lot of these people have the same problem I do, and they get it, and I can get to know them as people, not just symptoms. But sometimes
right.
it's, what can I do to feel more in control of the situation so I can enter?
Right. Okay, well, now I don't know if we had callers on the board or I just unmuted them to save me, but Janet, is there anything you'd like to say in closing about anything?
About anything.
Willing.
Please,
sure,
anything.
Well,
right, well, thank you very much, Kim, to you and to your audience. And for this opportunity, it's been a great chance to talk together. You know, your questions are great, and your reflections on your own experience enlighten me even as we're talking. So I think what you're doing is great, and the more we can share our experiences honestly and work through problems and get to know some new ways of handling life and being proud of the people we are, the better it all is.
The number here is 424-243-9540. I'm going to be, looks like I have been, if you guys can just hold on for a second. We'll be taking questions and comments for Janet in just a few minutes. I want to take this opportunity to thank Brain Injury Radio Network sponsor Gordon Johnson. If you have any litigation issues having to do with your TBI, do check out tbilaw.com. And I also am very thankful for my show sponsor, Lash Publishing, wonderful group of people. And one of them is our guest tonight, Janet Cromer. Please check out lapublishing.com and sign up for the new magazine. It'll be the second issue will be coming out here pretty quick, won't it, like this week or something?
Yes, it will.
Next week?
It should be out. Mm-hmm. Yes, it should be out, this is June, should be coming out any day now.
Okay.
And it'll be available online and as a print issue.
Right. The print issue, if you do want a print issue, that's $48 a year. You'd get 6 issues. But you can get the free online version of this magazine, and all you need to do is go to lapublishing.com. On your left, just down a little bit on your left, you'll see Brain Injury Journey. Click on that. It will take you to the magazine page, and it'll say e-version. Click here. You do that. You give them the email address, and then you'll start receiving the magazine. And it is a very informative magazine for survivors, caregivers, professionals, and all the interested parties. So I encourage you to do that. Janet, before we go to the callers, I always open the mics at the end if we have any questions, and I don't like to keep our guests all night long. I do want to tell all of you one more time before we do that, and then I'll let Janet make her anything she'd like to say at the end. But Professor Cromer learns to read, and I'm going to put that in the chat room. You can find that at Janet's website, which is janetcromer.com. That's www.janetcromer.com. And you can check out her website, or, of course, you can find her on Lash Publishing. And when I have trouble finding things, this is just an FYI. I'm sure all of you don't have trouble finding things. But if you do, they got a little search window in the upper left, and I just type in the last name, C-R-O-M-E-R, and that'll take you right to her book and probably to some of the articles she's written for the magazine. I agree. Are you up to taking a few questions or comments?
Sure. And I would just also say that people, if you're interested in checking out the new Lash Magazine Brain Injury Journey, it's written in plain English for real people, and, you know, written so everyone can understand it. And some of the topics are bound to be topics that apply to your life. And if they're not, just write in and let us know, and we'll write articles about those. We want to be
exactly.
responsive.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Go ahead, Jenny.
Yeah, this is Jenny. I was wondering if you had a chance to think about the question I asked you about how maybe we can talk to people that are maybe misinformed or uninformed about brain injury, even though they care and they know us, but they say things like, get out away from the computer, or stop doing that and go find your life, you know, reconnect with life, when we've already found what makes us happy. How do we get people to just accept that this is how far we've come and this is what we enjoy doing, this gives us purpose, and it doesn't make us feel bad or hurt our feelings and doesn't make us feel less than we should be?
That's a really important question, Jenny, and a really big one. So I'm going to try to give a very short answer to it, because it is such a big question. But as you describe it, this is what you're happy doing, and this is a big accomplishment to be doing it. If that's something your family member can't understand, sometimes, and you've said it to them that way, you've explained it the way you just explained it to me, which was quite clear, sometimes it helps to have a professional, you know, your doctor or a speech therapist, whoever it is, explain just how important what you're doing is to your family and that it does count. And to have a conversation with them about what they expect and why that might be unrealistic or not applicable to what you want. But sometimes bringing in an outsider who can be objective and can help your family understand that this is indeed a big accomplishment can help.
That's what I was wondering, because I had a family member who I actually am so involved in brain injury. I had my 2.5 story fall out of a window to a sidewalk. I had diffuse axonal injury. I had shearing. I had an AVM, which was reabsorbed with all the swelling, but I was in a coma for 3 weeks, and I was supposed to be, if I ever survived, I was supposed to be a drooling head. Well, I live alone. I'm very independent. I take care of my own bills. I take care of myself. It's been 6 years. I do online support for brain injury survivors. I do research. I also write to help other survivors. And I also have a lot of friends, more than I've ever had in my life before my injury. And I was out with a friend, somebody that I love and has known me my entire life since my injury and knows everything, I mean, on an almost daily basis. And this person was telling me, you know, you need to get out and you need to try this, or you need to go and do that. You know, you don't need an excuse. You need to do it. You need to get on with your life. And I'm thinking, but I have a life. I have so many friends. I have so many people that understand me. I don't have anybody that I have to please except myself. I have to be honest and caring, but I'm so involved. Why do I have to find a different form of life? Because the life I'm living is satisfactory and makes me very happy.
Right. Well, it sounds like my my goodness, it sounds like you've built a terrific life for yourself, especially with all of the injuries that you had. Sometimes we just have to accept that certain people are just not going to get it. You know, they may be projecting what they think they would want to do in the same situation, or you know, laying their values on your life. And sometimes we just have to say to them, you know, I hear your opinion, I respect it, but it doesn't relate to my life. Thanks anyway.
Well, the reason I brought this up is this is so helpful for brain injury survivors, because those are mainly who listens to this.
Yes, yes.
To hear from the outside, from somebody that loves a survivor, of how it is from the outside in, and giving advice to us. And so that is a blessing, so thank you.
Oh, thank you, and you're welcome.
Thanks, Jenny. Thank you so much for the question. Les Paul, you're up next. Did you have a question or comment for Janet?
Well, question and comment. I was just talking to someone about our local support group. We've got one that's called the CSRA Dreamcatchers that meets in North Augusta, South Carolina, and another one in Augusta, Georgia, and I was just told, and I didn't realize it, that our group is now 14 years old, and I was in at the very beginning of it. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people, like our host tonight, she didn't have a support group for so long, and I went 17 and a half years myself without a support group after being told, my mother being told, I would never survive, never thrive, never make it anything, take your son and have him put away. Because he's not going to function, not even know who he is if he ever lives. And so people like you and us all working together really make a great, a mold, something to build something anew. And I just appreciate you coming on because you've got a lot of information there, and Lash Publishing and all the different things working together. I was talking about music last night on my show. My show was last night, and we all need to make this perfect harmony together, each person hitting the right note. And it's hard to do that after a brain injury, but it's possible. So I just want to thank you for being here tonight more than anything.
Thank you, Les. And, I really like that description of writing this new harmony together. Yes, absolutely. We're a band or a team together, and making a new form of music.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, I don't see that we have any more questions in the chat room here. Craig, I guess I'm going to say it out loud instead of text, but somebody signed in and kicked me off Skype. I called back in, but I can't do another 2 hours on my shoulder. I want to try to get out and come back and get the Skype button. So I was wondering if one of my other co-hosts could call.
I will do it if he's not.
He just asked me, what's that? I was wondering, Craig, if you can't, Les Paul will. I don't want to belabor this, but if someone could just call in as the co-host, so we don't lose the show, I'm going to try to come back in and see if I can't get the Skype back to finish the rest of my show. And you guys have a couple of minutes to do it. I'm going to thank Janet again, and then I'm going to close my show in the usual way. And at that time, I wouldn't mind somebody in the co-host section. Thank you. So I can try to get my Skype back. I got really bad neuropathy problems in my face and neck from my surgery, and I can't do this on the telephone. I am usually really thankful for Skype because I don't have to hold the phone on my shoulder for a long time and wind up being in bed in pain for 2 days. So I want to try to get that Skype button back, but I apologize for that technical difficulty, Janet, and I will see if I can fix that in our interview when I provide you back with the link. But I want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight. Again, I encourage you all to check out Janet's book, Professor Cromer Learns to Read. Check out her website, janetcromer.com. By all means, go to Lash Publishing, which is lapublishing.com. check out Janet's work as well as the rest of our work, and I'm going to be doing an article pretty soon, and my book should be showing up in the Survivor section if it's not there already. So it's a pleasure working with you. It was even more of a pleasure to get to know you better by having you as a guest on the show tonight. So thank you very much for your time and your sharing and writing your book and all the things that you do, Janet.
Well, thank you so much for reading the book. It's not exactly a beach read. And for inviting me on the show, Kim. I really enjoyed our conversation very much and all the work that you're doing on behalf of the brain injury community.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Well,
thanks,
we'll let you. That's right.
All
we'll
right.
Let you get off.
Good night.
And good night to you. Thanks so much.
Okay, good night. Thanks so much.
Good night.
Okay, that was Janet Cromer. And again, if you missed the beginning of the show, certainly try to listen to the show in the on-demand section. What in the heck? Okay, I tell you what. There's something that we all have, and that's what I'm going to play. I'm going to do a little sound check here and Craig did already. I'm going to try to play a song so we can get off of the noise. I'm going to mute these mics for just a minute. Maybe I won't, Craig. I'm going to leave you open left just in case. Looks like thank you. Looks like Craig's got the studio secure, and you have a mic open if something happens. I am going to scroll up for just a minute, folks. And I am going to play a song for you while I try to get back in my regular seat. And this is something I believe that we all have, and that is a guardian angel. This is Guardian Angel by Leah West. And check out her site, leahwest.com. Thanks. And we'll be back in 4 minutes and 45 seconds. So go get something cool to drink, kick back, and I'll be back, I hope.
That was Leah West with Guardian Angel. It appeared for a moment that I don't have control of the studio, but apparently I got my Skype back a little bit. So, in any case, Les, I'm going to mute you for just 1 second and see if I can get rid of the background noise. I think Craig is still on the line. I'll try to open the chat, but just know right this minute, folks, that I don't have the chat. So, again, I want to thank Janet for being a guest on our show tonight. I thought she was just really super, and her book was really super. Whether you're a survivor or a caregiver, I encourage you to check out her book. It's really very good. I'm also really excited tonight for part two that of the show that I have gotten a couple new musicians and got a third I'm really excited about for next week. But I'm going to play a favorite that the folks that have been listening regularly the last couple of weeks. I think Dan's been with us a few weeks, and people really seem to like this song and like this guy. And I was going to tell you, I can't type it into the chat, but Les Paul had a really good idea. I think it was Les Paul. Forgive me if not, someone else. But this fella's name is Daniel Christian. His website is danielchristianmusic.com, and it's C-H-R-I-S-T-I-A-N. So Daniel, DanielChristianMusic. DanielChristianMusic.com is his website. And if you go to Facebook, you can type in the search Daniel Christian Music. And this was the idea that somebody had the other night. I think actually it was Keith Anthony. And that was, if you guys are also on Facebook and you like Dan, just in a little thanks for having these people let us play their music on the show, message him on Facebook at Daniel Christian Music and tell him you just heard Find My Voice on Kim's radio show. Make sure you say that. And on Kim's Brain Injury radio show, or Kim's Recovery Now, and let him know just how awesome we think he is. And while I play this song, I'll see if I can get the chat room back. This is really a great song, and it's something that I think that we all have struggled with at one time or another, and I was struggling with it just a little while ago, so it's really apropos. This is Find My Voice by Daniel Christian. 4 minutes and 8 seconds.
The question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. Brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive. under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice.
Find My Voice. I hope you guys enjoyed that song. He's a really nice guy. Gotten a chance to meet him, and I'll be seeing him again in person very soon. Frank, I see that you've been at the show for a long time, right about at the time my system crashed. In any case, your hand hasn't been up this whole time, so I thought you were just listening. If you want to ask a question, make sure to put your hand up, folks. Again, if you want to call in, the number is 424-243-9540. I think we have about 15 minutes left, so if anyone wants to hang out for some music and overtime, if we can get it, call in to 424-243-9540, and I would love to have you. Sorry, just having some technical difficulties tonight, trying to roll with them well, but it's real discouraging, especially when you've got a really good guest, to have technical difficulties and mistakes made in the middle of your program. So I'll be really happy when we got another studio, and I was whining earlier to Craig about learning something new, but I'm ready right now. So when we're done with this show, I want to learn something new. Okay, looks like your hand went up. Frank, I'm sorry. You didn't have your hand up before, so I thought you were just listening. I apologize.
Star 1 key or star 3 key. I hit them both and nothing happened. I forgot it was just a 1 key. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I make those kind of mistakes all the time. But, yep, in fact, that's good, Frank, that you said that. Folks, when you call in to the studio, 424-243-9540, in this next hour and a half, let's say, that we're going to have on the air, we not only play music, but we have some casual chat in between. So if you do have a question when you call in or you want to talk to me, press 1, and that will let me know that you want to talk. And if I don't see that, I don't answer the phone. I just assume you're listening, because in my early days when I didn't know about this stuff, I caught some people in some pretty embarrassing situations, so I don't do that anymore. Okay, Frank, you found the one. You're on. What's up?
Thank you, Kim. First of all, I wanted to tell you I had trouble getting into a Blog Talk Radio show tonight online, and I had to go and shut down, close everything down from my computer. I guess I had too much open to try and get in, but that was my problem. However, you did a great job interviewing her tonight. Now, if I could, I need a guest interviewee for my show, for my afternoon show tomorrow afternoon, just in case there is someone who wants to be on my phone for the Fantastic Show. And they could be listening. I don't care where they are, but you've got to get a hold of me. And that means you have to send me out an email. Do I want to give it over here or not?
Well, I think you can if you're looking for guests, but let me ask you this. You've got email on your website, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well then, if anyone's interested on being on Frank's show tomorrow, his website is IamFantasticFrank.com. So www.IamFantasticFrank, and he will have a way to email him.
Well,
from his website.
It goes to TwoTurnDisability2Ability.com. I switched over to a different website.
Oh, right. I keep forgetting that.
Okay.
Go ahead and give your website, Frank. If you're looking for guests, certainly. Go ahead and do that.
TurnDisability2Ability.com. TurnDisability2Ability.com. Les Paul says the sound is breaking up.
Oh. No doubt. I think we got your website, though. You guys hear his website out there? So, by all means, Frank is our Thursday night host. And
I need a guest for my afternoon show tomorrow, not my evening show. I have a great guest.
And he also has a daytime guest, a daytime show, too. Frank has two shows. He's our Thursday night host on Brain Injury Radio and has another half-hour show in the afternoon and is always looking for good guests. So write him for sure at that email address, and hopefully that'll get you a guest, Frank. I hope it helps.
Now, thank you, Kim. Thank you for allowing me. Now, can I plug something else? My book is available. I got my copy of my book today.
You did?
Yes, it's beautiful. It's called From Flawed to Fantastic, How I Turned My Disability into an Asset, $8.00 I got my copy today, and people who want to buy it could go to Amazon.com or to Barnes & Noble. It's listed on both there. It's already got two five-star reviews by people who have bought it. And I'm so happy to have this done because it took me over 2 or 3 years to get this done.
Right, I know. I know. Well, that's exciting, Frank. Congratulations. I know you've been working on that for a while, and there's nothing like being able to have that book the first day, is there? It's like, whoa, it's finally done.
Oh, thank you, Kim. Thank you for allowing me to plug my stuff.
You're welcome.
And tomorrow night, I'm going to have a woman. Her name is Dr. Lois Tannenbaum. She is a president of the New York State Brain Injury Association, whom I met when I was down at the meeting down in Auburn 2 weeks ago. And
cool.
She's got a story. She has a traumatic brain injury. And she's been living with, I don't know how long she's been living with hers, but I haven't got her entire story together yet. But it will be a great interview.
Good. Well, we'll be looking forward to hearing it. So I encourage you to check out Frank's show. It's at the same time, same phone number tomorrow night, and enjoy his guest and his show tomorrow night, and check out his new book. And certainly, if you're interested in being on his show tomorrow afternoon, write him at that website and be a guest. Cool. Anyway, as I was saying, make sure you get in. Okay. I can't watch the chat room. I'm flustered a little. I'm going to unfluster in a moment or not. So I'm going to play a song that's going to make me think of something happy. I was telling you guys earlier, and then I stopped to play Daniel, that I got a couple new people, one last week who I'm going to play in a minute, and one tonight, brand new tonight. Right. And I want to tell you that this gentleman, his name is Chris Dukes, D-U-K-E-S. And the way that you can find his website, it's called alwaysrecords.com, alwaysrecords.com. And if you want him on Facebook, you can look up Chris, C-H-R-I-S, last name Dukes, D-U-K-E-S. And it's Chris Dukes Band is how you distinguish him from any other Chris Duke on Facebook. And once again, if you are so inclined and if you like this song and you want to message Chris and let him know that you heard his debut song with Kim on Brain Injury Radio tonight and you liked it, I do have three of them, but I think we're going to start out actually – Tough call. Let's start out with Chris Dukes and a song called Heaven.
story be told. Half of me wants.
That was our new artist, Chris Duke, and Heaven. So be sure to check him out. It's Chris Dukes, actually. There's an S on that. It looks like we're coming down to the end of my scheduled time. I will go into some overtime if the music still sounds good for some amount of time into the next hour. But it looks like I've got less than 5 minutes left. Well, maybe I got a little more than 5 minutes left, but in any case, what I'm going to do real quick is I'm going to thank everybody who is here tonight listening and supporting Brain Injury Radio, and I want to thank my guest, Janet Cromer. I want to thank Lash Publishing, my show sponsor. Very happy to have them and Brain Injury Radio Network, who sponsors, TBI Law and Gordon Johnson, who sponsor Brain Injury Radio Network. Check them out at tbilaw.com. I got the 90-second warning, so I'm going to play one more song of Chris's to take us over into overtime. You got like 30 seconds if you want to be here. 60, actually, sorry, 424-243-9540, 424-243-9540, if you want to stay in chat or listen to some tunes. So I am going to fade out with one more song. This is the title to Chris's album. He's got a couple of them, but this is the one that I really liked the picks off of. And this is a song called, I guess as long as we had 60 seconds, I'm going to talk a moment and let this song roll into overtime. No sense in having you live listeners, thank you for being here, drop off when you've only heard four notes of the song. So this will be like, name that song in 15 seconds, right, Les Paul? You remember a show like that once?
Yes, I do.
We've got 10, so help me out. Let's count that down. 10, 9.
9.
Eight, seven,
six.
Ignition
sequence start. The engines are on.
We're on with
Chris. Roger, this is Houston. We have a liftoff.
We do, and we're officially into overtime. So I'm going to open overtime, and then we can talk with one more song of Chris Duke's, the title name of his album, Greater Than Me. Again, that's Chris Dukes with Greater Than Me. And I really, really like him. He's a New Yorker. He's probably up there somewhere in Frank's turf. I think he said Albany. A couple of my new artists are from New York. And then I got one from Craig's neighborhood, a young lady who is signing on and starting next week. We got to talk on the phone, and we talked so long this afternoon chatting about things that I wasn't able to get her up on the board, but I'll start playing her next week, and I'll have her information about how to get her site, so it's going to be a real surprise. But while we're on the subject of Chris Dukes for just one moment, I want to remind people, and I wish I would have done it before the live show went off the air, but anybody who hears this between now and next week is the week before the 4th of July, if you can believe it. 4th of July is a week from tomorrow. And 2 weeks, I'm sorry, 2 weeks from tomorrow. But a week from today, next week, is when I'm having on Jaspin Booth, the active duty Army veteran who founded the website Final Salute Inc. And I read on her site that there are 55,000 homeless female veterans on any given day coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq. And interestingly, Jaspin herself, she was recently interviewed on Katie Couric and on CNN. I think that I put the link for the CNN interview on Brain Injury Radio Network's Facebook page, which I encourage you to like, and on my In a Flash book page, which I encourage you to like. And so you can watch a little snippet of her, but she did start this organization to help those homeless female veterans. Now, Jaspin herself suffered cancer of the neck, throat, and head while in the service. And in Janet's book, interestingly enough, you guys know how cool things work in my life and yours if you notice it, but it's interesting, Janet's anniversary of the day that changed her life was July 5th, and I didn't know that when I booked her as a guest. So we're within a couple weeks of her anniversary from her husband's heart attack in 1998. When I found Chris Dukes, the way that I found him, I clicked on a song called Heroes, and I'm not going to play that for you tonight. I'm going to save it for Jaspin next week. But it was a cool song, and the video that went with it was about soldiers and veterans, and it was a patriotic video. And a cool song called Heroes. And so being a week off from celebrating the independence of our country, I'm always appreciative to our veterans. But I thought that would be a cool time to have Jaspin on and to play Chris's song Heroes. So certainly, thank you.